Saturday Night Theatre.
On a cold February morning in 1834, six poor farm labourers were arrested in the tiny village of Tolpuddle in Dorset and later accused at Dorchester Assizes of having taken an illegal oath, when what they'd done, in truth, was to band themselves together under the leadership of George Lovelace to form a trade union. Six Men of Dorset, by Miles Mallison and H. Brooks, which we're broadcasting now to mark this the centenary year of the Trades Union Congress, is founded on George Lovelace's own diary and tells the story of those six men of Dorset, known to us now as the Tolpuddle Martyrs.
One, and that's only a bit. And you know very well, Father, he won't have candle lit till he reads out of the book.
I'd be scared of the dark.
So be I.
You'd be a couple of great sillies. I got supper to get.
Supper? I'd be hungry.
So be I.
Can I have a tatey? Can I?
Bet you can't. You must wait.
But I can't wait.
Nor can't I.
Jenny.
Mother!
Ginny, look what I got.
A tarnish.
Run out with it to the back house before your father sees it. He'll be coming down along.
The back house?
It'll do for tomorrow. There won't nobody about when I come by the sheepfold. Quick now.
Mother, I want my supper. I want my supper too.
You'll be having it soon, my dear. Or you'll be father.
Betsy. Oh, I'd be glad you're home.
I'd be only just come.
My dears.
I'd be that hungry.
I'd be that hungry, too.
Be you ready for your supper, George?
A bit ready for me.
Aye.
Draw up, then.
Oh, it is little enough to stay their hunger, let alone ours, but it is all I can manage.
Taters! There ain't many. Mine be all little ones.
Quiet, children, quiet. For these and all thy mercies, may thy holy name be praised.
Amen.
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 You get wet, Betsy? I've been worrying about you all the afternoon since the rain came on.
There'll be things I can do, George, and things I can't. To work in the rain without getting wet's one of them.
Yeah, it's cruel bad weather. That's fact.
Ain't there no more?
Not tonight, Nellie.
But I want some more.
You'd best get off to bed, you children, as soon as you finish. You can get in together, all of you. Maybe you'll keep warm and sleep and forget.
Not till I've read from the book, Betsy.
Well, that won't fill their bellies, George, not keep them warm.
Bring me the book here now, Ginny. Now, what shall I read tonight, Betsy?
I don't mind. Makes no odds.
Well, maybe I'll go on from where I was reading last night. Luke. 11th chapter, it was. There it is. Remember? A man had come at night and asked his friend for three loaves, and the friend wouldn't get out of his bed, nor open the door, nor give him any. That's where I got to. I say unto you, though he will not rise and give him, because he is his friend, yet because of his importunity he will arise, and give him as many as he needeth. And I say unto you, ask, and it shall be given you. Seek, and ye shall find. Knock, and it shall be opened unto you. For everyone that asketh, receiveth. And of which of you that is a father, shall his son ask a loaf, and he give him a stone?
Now then, children, to bed. Say good night to your father. Ginny, my dear, put him to bed for me, and you'd best get in with him yourself. You'll be tired. I'll see about supper things.
It feels dark.
I can feel my way. Take my hand.
What comfort there is in the book.
Ah, you're a one for finding comfort, George. Seems to me the harder it is to find, the more you think of yourself finding it.
What's come over you, Betsy? You didn't say amen when I spoke to bless.
Why should I?
As the Lord, I was thankful.
And what for?
Betsy. You're a bad example for the children. Showing a rebellious and discontented spirit.
Well, maybe that's the best thing I can give them. I can give them little else.
You never said things like this before. What ails you?
What should ail me? And me out in the fields in the blinding rain all day and every day and day after day with my body bent double picking stones and with another child moving in me for 3 shillings a week. I do say the Lord sends the babies. Why, do that without sending the victuals for them is more than I know.
That'd be blasphemous talk.
Be it, and that's more than I know, too. Maybe it's blasphemy for you to stand there asking a blessing when the children go to bed with their bellies empty and like crying for hunger in the night.
You shouldn't say that. You know my heart aches that I can't do better for them. You know that. Every night I pray.
You may pray and read your book.
Betsy.
And did you get comfort out of it this night? About the children asking their father for bread and he'd give them a stone. What'd you give yours? Taters and not enough of them.
Be fair, Betsy. I only mean for myself. I do try to be content with my lot and accept in humble spirit what the Lord sends.
What the Lord sends. Do the Lord send that you and I and the likes of us should slave all our lives from the cradle to the grave and live worse than a beast and others live idle on the fat of the land. Ah, bend God's goodness, George Lovelace. That be man's wickedness. That be the real blasphemy. Putting that in the Lord.
But, Betsy, what can I do?
Maybe nothing. But if you've got to take your part in it, that's not to be proud of. I sometimes think to myself, accepting it all, so humble and meek, you're as bad as your masters. I tell you, it fair sickens me to hear you asking blessings and giving thanks. Maybe I've said more than I meant, though God knows, not more than I feel. Be you coming to bed?
You go, my dear. You're a bit tired.
What be you going to do?
Oh, I'm best alone. You've given me something to get on with.
Be your brother James coming?
Yes. And young Brian, constable's lad. And James Hammett.
Oh, he won't say much.
Oh, but he's a good lad. And Edward Legg, and Susan.
Legg?
Oh, yes. He'll offset Susan. She'll be headstrong.
Them five?
Yes.
And Bob Dumney?
I haven't asked him.
No, but he got wind of it and asked himself.
Oh. Well, that's bad.
Why shouldn't he come?
Well, Bob be a poacher.
But no fool.
I don't like the thought of him coming here. Leastways, not tonight.
Oh, there they be. No, it'd be Bob
Dunley. Hello, Betsy. Well, George, you don't mind my coming in this evening, do you?
Oh, of course he don't. Bobby be glad to see you.
He may, but your George can never tell no lies. Leaves you to tell him, don't he, George?
Well, maybe I thought we was going to talk about wouldn't interest you, seeing as you do no work.
No work? I work all right, George. But for myself, seems more sense in it that way.
Well, leastways, high wages or low makes little odds to you.
Ah, maybe you're right there. I reckon whatever wages you get, I'll always be better off, long as rabbits and partridges do grow in same field as turnips.
Aye, Bob, but they're not your undertake, you know that well as me.
But I can never remember it. I'd be very absent-minded about something.
But it's again the Lord, and I...
George, none of that preaching for Bob.
Nay, don't stop him. They do say he'd be the best preacher for 100 miles round. That's what I come for, a good sermon. I hadn't heard a fine raffle sermon since I were a lad, and I well remember the last. The preacher... He were a ploughman like yourself, George. He preached, the labourer is worthy of his hire. And I knew what he was getting. 7 shilling a week. Dang me, I said to myself, I'd be worth more than that, and I never went no more.
Bob, that's the talk. You've got the spirit in you.
7 shilling a week, George Lovelace. I suppose that be what you think you'd be worth. Or maybe a bob or two more, if you can get it.
Well, that be enough from you, Bob Dunley. You leave my George alone. He'd be the best ploughman in this village. I an endorse it. And what be you? A good for nothing, a bad, and that's all you be.
Well, you women folk, you be queer critters. A man never knows where he is with him. I'd be glad I never married.
And if half what folks say about you be true, there'd be more than one about these parts he ought to have married.
Hark to that, George. They bet she be saying I did ought to married more than one wife.
Oh.
And dang me, if thy precious laws allowed it, I would. They could loose off their tongues at one another and leave where he'd be.
Evening, Betsy.
Ah, James.
George, this is your brother.
Evening, George.
Evening, James.
Ah, brother is just behind. Oh, hello, Bob.
Now, James.
Come in, Susan.
Well, Betsy, my dear, how be?
As well as may be.
Evening, George.
Evening, Susan.
Evening, Mrs. Lovelace.
Evening, James Bryan.
Oh, come in, young Bryan.
Evening, Mr. Lovelace.
Hey, come in, Ahmed. Don't be standing outside.
Come in, James Ahmed. You'll be welcome.
Oh, aye.
Well, sit down, friends. There'll be just about seats enough. Now, we be all here to...
Lord, Cyclop, what be you? Edward Legg.
Be I Legg?
No, Edward, come in. You're welcome. And sit down. Now, friends, we'll waste no time. I think I can best put it shortly and simply this way. It's come to me that 7 shillings a week be no fair wage for a man who works hard from morning till night for the whole of his lifetime. To keep himself and his wife and his children. Well, we seem to be agreed upon that, all of us. Eh, Hammond?
Oh, aye.
Can't you say some of that, Edward Legg?
When time comes.
Now, the first question be this. Can our masters afford to pay more?
Ah, that'd be a question.
Hold your tongue.
I don't allow they can afford it.
That's the sort of damn fool thing you would say.
Now, Susan, bide quiet. Let be entitled to his opinion, same as rest of us.
Opinion? He ain't got no opinion. He be a louse.
A louse? She called I a louse.
Sit down, Edward. We've been here to discuss what you are.
We knows.
George, allowing they can't afford it.
They can afford it.
And a sight more. Hey, James?
Oh, I...
Have you anything in your mind as to how to set about getting it, George? I think of naught else, day and night. Well, I propose I should go to Parson. And ask him that a few of us men should meet some of the farmers up at Parson's house.
Fat lot, you'll get out of Parson.
Well, it's no more than his duty, Susan, to help his flock, and after all, church folk or chapel folk. And then there'd be neither for all that. We'd be all his flock. Brothers.
Tell Parson he'd be brother to the squire, he'll swear like a peacock. Tell him he'd be brother to you or I, he'll sing a different song.
I don't think we should speak such things to Parson till we know us, James.
George, have you thought if you do get to meet the farmers and ask for a rise, you may get more than you reckon for?
What do you mean by that, Bob Dominey?
The sack.
The sack.
I thought of that, too.
It'd be presumptuous, that's what it'd be. Presumptuous, asking for a rise. We ain't like squire, we ain't like farmers. We be poor folk. I'll not be hard, I know that, but we be born to it, look you.
Edward Legg, if a worm was to stand upon its hind legs and open its mouth and let out words, it'd talk as you do talk.
First I'd be a louse, then a worm, because I wish I'd never come.
You bet, old man.
Now, please, Susan, hard words between ourselves won't get us no further. Now, my own mind's made up. I shall go to Parson first thing in the morning and arrange, if may be, to meet the farmers. And ask for a rise.
George? You be a godly man, and you ought to know better. It ain't safe to ask farmers. It be safer to ask the Lord.
It's come to me, Edward. I'll ask the Lord for nothing. I'll not risk everything to get.
That don't sound Christian, do I? Praying for summat and then trying for it? You might get it for yourself, but that don't give the Lord a chance to show what he can do.
You be worse than any squealing rabbit I ever tapped, Edward Legg.
No, a rabbit! George, will he stop it?
Maybe I used to think like you, Legg. But I come to think that God works through men. And he looks to us to do our part. So there's nothing for it but to strive after more decent living, not only for ourselves, but for all them that labors. It'd be a duty.
You'd be a good man, George Lovelace.
Oh, I don't know about that, Susan, but I always never want to be happy escaping a duty. So my way's clear. Though I ask no man to follow me. All the same, I've written down some names of those that might come with me to meet farmers. There's Thomas Stanfield and his son John. And the rest be you, my brother James.
I'm with you, George.
James Bryan.
Oh, yes, Mr. Lovelace. I'll be glad you wrote my name down.
Good boy. James Hammett.
Don't he go, James. Don't he go. You'll be warned in time.
Well, Hammett, what do you say?
I
shall go and see Parson after work tomorrow. And if we get to meet farmers up at his house, Maybe you'll let me lead off with a talk. Are you telling me Ben asking for this rise as a favor out of their charity? But because it be ours, by right. Now, so, gentlemen, we're not asking you for charity. We'd be asking for no favors. We'd be asking for this rise in the name of justice and humanity. And right.
Well, the fella can talk. Well, Brad, what do you think of all that?
Well, just that, Squire. Talk. He seems to think us farmers in the business of our health. We got to live, same as you, Loveless.
Aye, but you don't live same as us.
And if we live same as you, who'd be paying your wages? If we paid more, there'd be no farms, and you'd get nothing. Then you might have something to grumble about.
That's true enough, Mr. Bryant. That's true enough indeed.
Of course it's true. Will you never get fellas like them to see it? Che, waste of breath. Well, Loveless, I'm enjoying this. Come on, man, you're not beaten yet. You must have an answer to that.
I think you'll agree, gentlemen, that Dorset land be as good as any. Leastways as good as Hampshire land.
And I'm not drinking with any man who doesn't agree to that. Dorset's the finest county in the kingdom, with the finest land. You're squeak.
And Dorset men at least as good as Hampshire men.
Well, yes, I don't see why we shouldn't agree to that.
And Dorset farmers at least as good as Hampshire farmers.
Yeah, that damn sight better.
And Hampshire farmers can afford to pay their men 10 shilling a week.
Warren, fill up a glass for him.
No thanks, sir. Thank you, not for me. I've been used to it. Well, I said my say. Perhaps Parsonier, who is good enough to arrange this meeting, say a few words on our behalf.
Me? Really, Lovelace, I hardly think it's fair of you to ask me to interfere between masters and men. These gentlemen know their business far better than I do. After all, it's the spiritual welfare of my people I'm concerned with, much more than the material.
You're, Doctor. You're, very sound.
You took the words out of my mouth, Bryant.
Did I? Seems to me folks usually put words into your mouth.
Parson, can I ask you a question?
Well?
Would you work for 7 shilling a week, from early morning till late at night, and as often as not go hungry and cold, and worse, see your wife and children go hungry and cold? Would you, Parson?
I don't see what that's got to do with it.
Oh, come, Doctor. It's a question, anyhow. He wants an answer.
Very well, Squire. It seems to me perfectly clear that Stanfield and I lead our lives in entirely different stations. In our appointed stations. Appointed for us by one who is infinitely wiser than either of us. Who knows what is good for me and what is good for Stanfield? And, viewed in that light, the question appears to me, with all due respect to you, sir, as a piece of pointless insolence.
That's so. That's what it is, insolence.
No, I'm inclined to think it's more. The disrespect to myself I could overlook. But it goes deeper than that. It's a questioning of a social order which may not be perfect, because man is not perfect, but which is, in its main structure, divine.
Now that's what I call religion. Make short work of all this whining, and shows it for what it is. Against religion. Downright wickedness.
I didn't know you were a religious man, Dovett.
Well, I'm not one to parade my religion, Squire, but I know the value of it. That keeps these fellers in their place. And mind you, when all's said and done, they got precious little to complain of.
Precious little to complain
steady,
of?
Steady, James.
I won't steady, George. I ain't be going to stand here and be told I get little to complain of.
James, Lovelace.
No. You're letting go on. Let him go on.
And I be going on and without asking you or leave neither.
Now, Louis, we do plow and sow the wheat for you and reap it, and never a loaf of bread do we get our hands on. And we raise the cattle for you and the sheep, and never a bite of good meat do we get our teeth into. And we do shear the wool and go on rags and sacking ourselves. We tend the chicken and ducks and geese and collect the eggs, and never a one for us.
That's enough. Be quiet. You ought to be ashamed of yourself. I allow you men to come here as a special favor. You ought at least to show some gratitude.
Well, what did you expect?
Quite right, Brand.
Giving their old case away. That's what he's done. They don't want an extra shilling or two. They want everything. They want the earth.
And the earth do belong to us, much as to you. 'Tis us do tender.
What about that, Duffy? Upon my word, you're getting as good as you give. I've no patience with them. And really, Squire, I've little patience with you.
And what may you mean by that, Mr. Duffett?
Encouraging him.
And let me tell you, Mr. Duffett, that whether I choose to encourage him or not is no concern of yours.
That's just where you're wrong, sir. It does concern all of us. We've all got to stick together. Haven't you got any memories, any of you? Less than a year ago, what happened? Mobs of these fellers, thousands of them, rioting, burning, and pillaging. Not only here in Dorset, but in Hampshire, Wiltshire, all over the country. And that's what you're asking for again, unless you keep them under where they belong. I tell you, give one inch, you're in now, and we'll all be murdered in our beds.
I got something to say to that. Now, okay.
Quiet, boy, quiet. You leave this to me. Let me answer it. Mr. Duffy, sir, we can't let that pass. You know as well as I do. When there was all this rioting you speak of and Rick burning, I and my brother here were set to watch him. And would you have done that if we was rioters? You know as well as I do, all of you gentlemen, how many men be turned off after harvest time? 20 year in Tallpaddle. Good, steady men, too, with families dependent on them. Have you ever thought the misery of such men? Have you ever tried to? Will they be law-abiding and know full well the penalty for breaking the law? Driven to rob a Swede, maybe, from the fields or poach a rabbit just to stay the cravings of their own hunger or to stop the crying of their children for food?
Come, 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 Lovelace, you're not defending poaching and thieving.
No, squire, but I'd be telling you what makes poachers and thieves and rioters like what Mr. W. is afraid of.
Afraid? Me afraid? Who said I were afraid?
And you'd have little need to be if you do right by us.
Oh, aye.
There they are. Threats. Talk of their rights. Got from two boys. Well, you don't know what the country's coming to.
Gentlemen. What could these poor men hope for? Armed with sticks against your soldiery. What harm did they try for?
Harm? Oh, they smashed up my new threshing machine.
And burnt two of my ricks.
And the same the length and the breadth of the country.
And in the old length and breadth of the country, gentlemen, those thousands of workers, desperate with hunger, didn't take a single life or deal a single wound. There was no murder in their hearts. But at their size of afterwards, hundreds of them were sentenced to death. And hundreds more taken from their families and transported overseas. I'm not defending what they did. But they was drove to it by low wages and no wages. Good men they were. Brave. Honest. And patient and enduring beyond belief. I know them, gentlemen. They was men that I'd worked beside in a field since we was boys that... They're swung up in the gallows. There are women down in the village now on the parish with naught to do for the rest of their lives but wonder what be happening to their men who are living out their lives as criminals to the side of the world.
Come on, Brad. Bring your dog and then cough up that 10 shillings.
Well, that's all very well with you, squire. Well, look here. If we raise their wages, will you reduce our rent?
Don't be a fool, Duffy. But if you don't raise the wages, I'm raising the rents.
You're not serious, squire.
I am. Duffy here, rather forgetting himself, suggested I'm encouraging the men. Well, maybe. But I know what I'm about. I know which side my bread's buttered. And it's to my advantage that you farmers should pay your hands enough to keep the countryside safe for your betters. And that's flat.
Yes, but squire...
Now, Brian, I know what you're getting for your wheat. And you're buying fresh land every year. Don't you talk to me about not being able to afford it.
Well, it ain't a question of being able to afford it. It's the principle of the thing.
Of course, there's a lot in what Squire says.
Thank you, Case.
Well, no offense, Squire. And I can afford the 10 shillings if Brian can.
Oh, better than you, Case.
No man's going to say to me I can't afford what they can.
You've got your rise, Lovelace.
We've much to thank you for, Squire.
Well, now that's all fixed up so pleasantly, I think perhaps you men ought to be getting home. Well, Lovelace?
There's one thing, Parson. It is usual, surely, to have agreements like this put on paper and signed.
Well, I'm damned.
Are you implying, Lovelace, that you don't trust these gentlemen to keep their word?
And if they do mean to, where's the arm in writing it down?
No, Lovelace, nothing on paper. That's going too far.
I agree. Quite unnecessary.
Who do they think they are? That's what I want to know.
You know very well, Duffy, if I'd promised to reduce your rents, you'd want it on paper.
And that I would. But hey, you're a different squire.
And what may you mean by that, Mr. Duffy?
Now look here, Lovelace. Frankly, I think you're presuming too much on our good nature, and it's time you went. After all, I've been a witness here tonight of what's passed, and if you'll go quietly now, you shall receive as much for your labor as any men in this or any other district. And if your masters should go back on their plighted word, I'll undertake to see you right. So help me God.
Oh, you say, Parson.
Dr. Warren.
In my own way, I too am a servant of the Lord. And out of those words of yours, I can. And I do. Thank you from the bottom of my soul. And there'll be many hundred of poor folk outside these walls that'll thank you and bless your name. Long after all, we be dust. Good night to you, sir. And thank you again. And thank you to you, gentlemen. And squire. Come, lads. In this very room in my cottage where, Mr. Cobb, 2 years ago, we decided to ask for a rise. And a few nights after that, we met three of the farmers up at Parsons.
I understand they kept their promise and your wages went up to 10 shillings.
No, never. To 9 they went. And that only for a few months. And then to 8. So we went to a neighbouring magistrate to ask his advice. And we was told we must work for whatever our employers thought fit to give us. And very soon after that, the wages went back again to 7. And now there's talk of them going to 6. So I thought it was about time to send a letter to you gentlemen in London.
I'm very glad you did.
Well, we don't tell her this grand night. You must forgive me, gentlemen. It's got such a longish name, I never could get my tongue to it first time.
The Grand National Consolidated Trades Union.
Aye, so that's it. So we thought perhaps you might help us. For we seem to have put our hands to the plough, as you might say, and it don't seem right now to turn back.
Well, as soon as your letter reached us, a meeting was called. And young Harry Brown here and myself were delegated to come down and see you.
I wonder how much you gentlemen who live right away in London know of the things that go on in these parts.
Well, we get to know all we can.
What are the things I could tell you?
Yes? Well, go on, Mrs. Lovelace.
While I've been listening to you gentlemen, I've been trying to keep my mind from the next village. There'll be a woman there, well, little more than a girl she is. I don't know how she'll be living through these hours. Well, seems only the other day I met her in the street just outside here, the day her lad asked her to marry him. And she didn't know what answer to give to him. She was afeard. And I told her, say yes. And she did. And they got on that well and had 2 children. And then suddenly were put out of work. 'Twasn't so many weeks ago I met him as I was coming on from the fields. And I spoke to him. But he didn't see me. He was close near me. And he looked at me, but he didn't see me. And he passed on into the darkness. The next night it was, he took a sheep and killed it. And fed himself and them that were his to feed. Oh, 'tis easy enough. The sheep to roam all night over the fields and hills, far away from the village in the dark, untended. So many of them. Who'd miss one? But they caught him and hanged him. And she walked mile upon mile to where he was swinging from the tree and begged his body. And begged to lift in a cart to bring her man home, to bury him decent. This morning, she buried him.
A life for a life, eh?
Ah, they do kill us and break our arms for less than that. There was that fine gentleman from Parliament,
I
George.
Betty, that... But let me.
No, let her go on. Go on, Mrs. Lovelace. Tell us in your own way.
From the London Parliament he was, and he was a judging on the bench here. And they brought before him a man, they said, had took a plank of wood off the gentleman's own land it was. The gentleman sat there and made a fine speech full of tongue-twisting words about the enormity of the crime and sentenced him to be sent overseas for 14 years. And there was young Sutton, a boy you were, and down at pub they give him some beer, maybe fuddle the lad, and he took 4 pence. And him they sentenced to be hung.
Hung?
Aye. But in their great mercy, they spared him and sent him overseas for life. Oh, I could go on and on.
There's one thing that passes my comprehension.
Well, what's that, Lovelace?
The gentry. When they sit in judgment on some poor fellow, there don't seem to be no sorrow in them, let alone pity or mercy. Rather a queer kind of pleasure. At least with righteousness, as if they was doing something fine.
I think I can account for that.
How, sir?
Well, they're afraid, Lovelace. After all, it wasn't so long ago, over in France, these same gentry drove the workers too far and their heads came tumbling off like ninepins.
Oh, but gentlemen, we don't want none of that. Yeah, an eye for an eye, why, we'd be as bad as they, and I bent one for going against the law.
To form a society or join a society is not illegal. Well, it was until recently, but it's not now.
What you've been telling us, Mrs. Lovelace, it's terrible enough, God knows. And your hours of work and your wages, but at least you're out in the open under God's sky. But in the spinning mills, men and women are herded together in rooms and sheds 14 hours a day and locked in. And the air gets foul and their throats get dry and parched till it's torture. And even the rainwater is kept out of their reach in case they should steal it. 3 shillings a week. That's what they pay the children.
Children?
And little more than babies. They get them as soon as they can walk, as soon as they can crawl. The tinier they are, the better to crawl under the machines and pick up the waste cotton. And from 6 in the morning, they work them till 8:30 at night. And when the mills are extra busy, from 3 in the morning until 10 at night. Just as long as they can keep them awake, they keep them at it.
But how can the parents allow it?
They get no relief from the parish unless they send their children to work. So it's that or extinction. I've seen a mother hurrying off her children to the mills at 5 in the morning. They probably hadn't been in bed 6 hours, and the poor mites were sobbing their hearts out. But so was she.
Well, gentlemen, there'll be one of these here union lodges in Tolperl just as soon as we can get it started.
And that's what we've come all this way to hear. Well, Harry, we'd better be getting along. Good night, Lovelace, and we're meeting your friends here tomorrow evening at the same time.
Oh, about this, what you call initiation ceremony, there ain't nothing illegal again the law in that, is there?
Oh, good gracious, no.
Only I'd heard something of a lot of swearing that had to be done.
The initiation oath? Oh, but that's only what the Freemasons do, and the Orange Lodges and the other societies that have their own rites and secrets.
Yeah. I don't rightly see the reason of it.
Well, Lovelace, you know some of your employers aren't going to be too pleased with you.
That's true enough.
And they'll put a black mark against any man who has anything to do with you.
Black mark? Give them a sack right away.
Probably more so in the country than in the towns. So we found it advisable to have these initiations, where the men take a solemn pledge to stand by one another and never give each other away. Oh, but I'll explain the whole thing tomorrow evening when I meet your friends.
Yes, sir, thank you. They'll all be here.
Good night, Mrs. Lovelace.
Good night, sir. And I shan't never forget the things you said.
Well, maybe this evening's been a fateful evening for Tolpuddle and you and your husband.
Maybe.
Good night, Lovelace.
Good night, sir.
A union lodge in Tolpuddle, that'd be good talk.
And we've got to make it more than talk, Betsy.
Oh, George, I'd be so proud of thee. I do love thee.
Betsy?
I've so much to be thankful for. Well, I got you, there'd be happiness deep in me all the time. I couldn't live without thee, George, I couldn't.
Oh, Betsy, lass, you'll never have to. You know, it is the same with me. I couldn't live without you. And now, Edward Legg, hold the Bible, kneel and swear. Say the words after me as I say them. I, Edward Legg.
I, Edward Legg.
Do voluntarily declare.
Do voluntarily declare.
That I will persevere in endeavoring to support a brotherhood.
I will persevere in endeavoring to support a brotherhood.
Known by the name of the Friendly Society of Agricultural Laborers.
Known by the name of the Friendly Society of Agricultural Laborers.
And I call upon God to witness this, my most solemn declaration.
And I call upon God to witness this, my most solemn declaration.
That neither rewards, punishments, nor even death itself.
Rewards, punishments, nor even death itself.
Shall ever induce me. To give any information respecting anything contained in this lodge.
To give any information respecting anything contained in this lodge.
Amen.
Amen.
Kiss the book. Rise and stand.
Brethren,
declare this lodge to be duly closed, and so it is.
God save us.
Blessed with sweet harmony, honor.
Well, Dr. Warren, here's the poster. You see how we've worded it. Mischievous and designing persons have been for some time past endeavoring to induce and have induced many laborers in many parishes in this county to attend meetings and to enter into illegal societies or unions to which they bind themselves by unlawful oaths administered secretly by persons concealed who artfully deceive the ignorant and unwary. Guilty of felony, transported for 7 years. We've had that posted all over the place, and this morning I had 6 of the ringleaders arrested. They're here now in the next room with the constable.
Before we have them in, Wollaston, I had another letter this morning from Lord Melbourne. I think perhaps I ought to tell you, Dr. Warren, before we go any further. Of course, this is all very confidential.
Quite.
I've had a very considerable correspondence with Lord Melbourne. I considered it my duty to inform him of the very alarming and dangerous state of affairs down here. I mean this combining of the labourers. And Lord Melbourne was good enough to acquaint me with the fact that he himself considered that all these new societies all over the country were one of the most formidable difficulties with which he had to contend. He asked me to send him a complete statement, as far as I could, concerning this secret oath, because he feels, as I'm sure we all feel, the evil has to be met here and now, and a blow dealt while there's yet time, before the infection spreads.
That's all very well, but the point is that this combining is not in itself illegal. A recent act of Parliament made it legal. And a damn silly act, too.
In my view, and in the view of the government, the whole thing turns on the question of this oath. And it's deucedly difficult to get information about it.
As a matter of fact, Warren, we've had 1 or 2 men we can trust watching them. Legg, come in here.
Morning, gentlemen.
This is one of the men who's informed on them. Constable. Constable Bryan. Bring those men in.
Well, lads, in you go.
Well, Constable, you arrested these men this morning?
Yes, sir.
Any trouble?
No, sir. I went first to George Lovelace's house, and I said to him, I said, George Lovelace, I've a warrant from the magistrate for your arrest.
And what did he say?
He asked what was in the warrant.
And what did you say?
I told him to take and read it for himself. You'll be a scholar, I said, George, more than I be.
And when he'd read it?
Well, he gave it back, and I said, be you willing to go to the magistrate with me?
And what was his answer to that?
Well, he said he'd come with me to any place wherever I wished. So I took him along with me and arrested t'other 5. And here they be.
And no trouble with any of them?
No, sir. George Lovelace, he told them all to come quiet. He told them they undone naught to be ashamed of, and they unbroke no law. And they'd be back again in their homes by the evening.
Did he? I shall be sorry to disappoint him. Legg, are you prepared to swear that these are the men who were present at the meeting at George Lovelace's cottage when you were compelled to take this oath?
Yes, sir.
These 6?
Yes, sir.
And as far as you know, no others?
Mr. Wollaston, sir.
Well,
that bein' correct.
We needn't go into that now. You'll have plenty of opportunity.
But this bein' justice.
You'll get justice, all right.
James Hammett, boy, speak up for yourself. You weren't there when Legg was.
Maybe I weren't, but I'm with you all the same. I wouldn't be nowhere else but here.
But, boy, you speak...
Let be, Mr. Lovelace.
Constable, take those irons off his wrist. Come here, Lovelace. What have you got there in your pocket? So, the proclamation. You can read?
Yes, sir.
Presumably, you've read this.
Yes, sir.
This seems to put rather a different complexion on all this fine talk of yours, eh, Lovelace? Not breaking the law, indeed. Here it is, as plain as can be set out that you were breaking the law.
Mr. Wollaston, sir, how can you say that?
If you paid proper heed to a caution put out by the magistrate, you wouldn't find yourself in this predicament.
But I were only posted up the day before yesterday. How can you say I took no heed of it? I took one down and put it in my pocket. Have it to study. As far as I can make out, what... We've been brought here for forming this union. That happened nigh on 2 months ago. So how can you say we knew we were going again the law?
I can see it's no good talking to you.
No, sir. Unless you talk more reasonable.
What's that?
And would you mind telling me, sir, in what way we have gone again the law?
Oh, you'll find that out all right.
And when shall we find out, sir?
Look here, if there's going to be any cross-examining done, I'm the one to do it. What? Oh, yes, I agree, Dr. Warren. Certainly. Constable... Take these 5 men back into that room and wait. George Lovelace, stay here. Legg, You'd better go with those others. What? Oh, very well. You go in the other room, then. Well, Lovelace, we don't want to be hard on you. We're sorry to see a man of your quality in a situation like this. And we want to give you another chance. If you'll give us your promise here and now to have no more to do with this union, you can walk out of this room a free man and go home to your wife and family.
I don't understand, sir.
It's quite simple. Tell us all you know of this union, who else belongs to it, and so forth.
You're asking me to betray my friends?
There's no need to put it like that.
Let this be foolish talk, sir.
No, Lovelace, it's you that's being foolish. We're interested in this union. Why shouldn't we be? Why shouldn't you tell us about it? If it's all above board and legal, as you obviously imagine it is. When you started this union, or society, or whatever it is, you must have had some idea at the back of your head, some purpose. What does it mean to you? Come now, you can tell us that.
We meant nothing more, sir, than to unite together to keep up the price of labor and to support each other in time of need.
And that's all?
Of course, sir. Dr. Warren, you can bear witness. He was there when we met the farmers and were promised a rise in wages, a promise that has been broke. And Dr. Warren said if the farmers went back on their plighted word, he'd heard that promise. And he'd see us righted.
I never said anything of the kind.
And it was because we learned we couldn't trust the farmers any more than we could trust this gentleman for all the livery he wears that we formed this union among ourselves.
So what's the good of going on with this? A lot of idle, discontented, irreligious dissenters.
One moment, Doctor. There may be idle, discontented men among them, but I think we've agreed that Lovelace is not one of them. He's honest and truthful. And that's why I'm the more surprised at your attitude now, Lovelace, because you're not telling the truth. Or are withholding the truth.
No, sir.
Oh, yes. There's some conspiracy at the back of these unions.
No, sir, the reverse. Every man that joins a union is bound not to go against the laws.
The laws of the union?
Of the country, sir.
And what are they bound by?
You know very well, Lovelace, you've got some secret sign among yourselves by which these societies up and down the country know one another and can keep in touch and start a strike against work or rise up together at the given signal.
I know nothing about that, sir.
But you must know something about this oath that's administered.
I can tell nothing, sir.
Have you taken this oath yourself?
I can tell nothing, sir.
Have you any idea, Lovelace, what 7 years transportation means?
Yes, sir.
A hell upon earth, those convict settlements have been called.
I'm in your hands, gentlemen, but I can tell nothing.
Is that your last word?
Yes, sir.
Constable!
Chain him up again. And take the six of them to jail.
Oh, one moment, Constable. There is one final aspect. Men like you, Lovelace, often take a misguided pleasure in self-inflicted martyrdom. But in your blind selfishness, have you given a moment's thought to your wife and children? What will be their fate when the wage earner deserts them? You know yourself, you've seen it, to what depths of misery and want they sink, innocent as they are, when the man who has solemnly undertaken before his Maker to care for them leaves them utterly unprotected. For 7 years. If indeed he ever comes back at all.
I can tell nothing, sir.
Constable. Well, I'm inclined to think it's all turning out for the best.
That man has a large following in these parts. A jury might acquit him.
The jury will be very carefully chosen, Dr. Warren. We've got him. Now, Leg, I want you to tell us, in your own words, when first you heard of the union, this society.
I saw young Brian and James Ammett one evening.
And where?
In the street. I was in my house, and they called me and said they wanted me.
And what then?
They asked if I'd go with them to Tolpuddle.
And what did you say?
Well, I asked what for.
And what did they say to that?
They said they wanted to see how many they could get together.
how many they could get together. Yes. Did you ask any other questions? Any details?
Well, I asked whether there was going to be any swearing.
What did you ask that for?
Well, I heard there was a lot of swearing going on.
What do you mean by swearing?
Well, swearing.
You don't mean bad language. You mean the swearing of oaths.
Yes, sir.
Yes. All right, go on.
You asked them straight out if they intended to make you take an oath. Is that what you mean?
Yes, sir.
So you went along with them towards Tallpuddle?
Yes, sir.
And when you reached Tallpuddle, where did you go?
To George Lovelace's.
And what happened then?
We went inside.
Did you see anybody when you went inside?
Well, I saw George and his brother.
What were they doing?
Well, I didn't rightly see them, as you might say. I saw their backsides going along the passage.
You say you saw these men from behind. How do you know who they were?
Oh, I know them.
They were George Lovelace and James Lovelace, two of the prisoners in the dock.
Yes, sir.
You've absolutely no doubt?
No, sir. Know them all my life.
Now, Leg, I want you to tell us what happened to you that evening in George Lovelace's cottage.
I was took into a room, and then young Stanfield, he comes up to me and asks if I'm ready.
Ready for what?
Ah, that's it. I didn't know.
Then what did you say?
I says yes. And then he took me by the arm, he did, and led me along a passage till we was standing outside a door. And then I was took inside. And somebody seemed to be reading a piece from a book, though I don't know what it was all about.
Who was in the room?
Those six.
No one else?
No, sir.
But you'd swear to those six?
Yes, sir.
Then what happened?
George Lovelace, he put a little book into me hand.
Yes.
And said I was to kneel down.
Yes.
And said I was to repeat words out of him. And I did.
Do you remember any of the words you were told to repeat?
Well, can't say as I do. I don't rightly know what they were all about.
Do you remember whether there was anything about promising to keep what you were saying and doing a secret?
Yes, sir. There was that.
You spoke of having a little book put in your hand to hold. Can you tell us more about the book?
At the end, George said I were to kiss it.
This book, was it the Bible?
Looked like it.
Come, surely if it was a Bible, you'd know it was a Bible, wouldn't you?
Yes, sir.
Well, answer the question. Was it the Bible?
Yes, sir.
And after this ceremony, or whatever it was, was anything said among yourselves?
Yes, sir. They said I was to pay a shilling.
A shilling? That's a lot of money for you.
A terrible lot. And a penny a week afterwards.
And did they tell you why you had to pay it?
To support other men when they were standing out of work.
Was anything said about stopping work? Striking?
Yes, sir. They said we were as brothers. And when we were to stop work, we shouldn't have to tell our masters ourselves, but that our masters would have a letter sent them.
Thank you.
You told the court, Leg, that one of the prisoners in the dock asked you to repeat certain sentences after him.
Yes, sir.
And you told the court that you don't remember what those sentences were.
No, sir.
Can you repeat here now anything at all of what you repeated then?
No, sir.
In fact, you can't remember one single word.
No, sir.
Now, Leg, I want you to look across at those men facing you in the dock. You told my learned friend that you've known them all your life.
Yes, sir.
You've grown up with them, played with them as boys, worked with them as men, is that so?
Yes, sir.
Have you ever heard a single word against any of them?
Can't say as I have.
You can't say that you have. You'd like to be able to, but you can't. But in fact, they were your friends, your very good friends.
Yes, sir.
Yes. Yet you go to the house of one of them, the house of one of your oldest friends, and immediately you rush off and tell some story, or vague, rambling, uncertain story, it's true, but with one object, of getting your fellow workers into trouble. And what is your answer to that? I must say, I'm not surprised you can't find one.
You understood that there was to be no swearing. You were tricked into taking what you believed to be an oath. And you considered that you had a duty that transcended friendship.
Yes, sir.
That'll do. You can stand down. Any further witnesses?
No, Lord. That closes the case for prosecution.
Gentlemen of the jury, the first point that it is my duty to make perfectly and absolutely clear in all your minds is that these six men who stand before you as prisoners in the dock stand there indicted under an Act of Parliament passed in the reign of His Majesty King George III in 1797, nearly half a century ago. It was an act which dealt with certain evilly disposed persons who were at that time seeking to seduce deliverable danger. But I want to put it before you that it is a gross mishandling of fact to pretend that those six men are in any way the evilly disposed persons against whom this measure was designed. Indeed, gentlemen, here in this court today, for everyone who has any knowledge of his fellow men, the very opposite has been proved. These men are respectable, honest, hard-working, laboring men. And witnesses, mind you, brought here and put into that box not by the defense, but by the prosecution. You've heard their employers, the farmers, for whom they worked, brought here to give information against them, who had to admit on oath that these men, the prisoners, were the best men they'd ever had on their farms. And apart from this alleged crime of forming a union, there was absolutely nothing against them. Try as they might, the prosecution have not been able to blacken the character of one of those men in one single detail. And when all's said, what have they done? They have formed among themselves what is no more or less than an agricultural friendly society. A society to provide a fund out of their own wages for mutual succor in their hours of need. It is past my comprehension that the forming of such a society can by any stretch of imagination be deemed a mutinous or seditious act. I will go further. I will suggest, so far from being evilly disposed, they have acted as you. Praiseworthy spirit of prudence and foresight. Oh, gentlemen, if you look honestly into your own hearts, you must find they are not blame for what they've done, but admiration. Now, before I resume my seat, one final word as to this oath to which the prosecution attached supreme importance. Now, even supposing that this Act of 1797 has any bearing on this case at all, which I most emphatically deny, but even so, that Act requires that the administering of an illegal oath should be explicitly proved. And has it been? Oh, there's only one answer. As surely as I'm standing here, it has not. To prove this most vital point in their case, the prosecution have brought here just one witness. And a peculiarly stupid one at that. And what's the next story? That at a certain meeting, to which he obviously went of his own free will, some words were uttered by whom he didn't know, about something he didn't understand and for what purpose he couldn't imagine. I most confidently submit that not one charge brought against any of the prisoners has been proved. And if here today they are branded before the world as criminals, there will be a most profound and disturbing dissatisfaction from one end of this country to the other. Never before in the whole of my legal career have I felt as strongly as I feel now that not only mercy and humanity, but truth and justice cry out for your verdict of not guilty.
You have heard a good deal during this case of the Unlawful Oaths Act of 1797, the Act of Parliament under which the indictment against the prisoners has been framed. And the counsel for defense, in his very able handling of the case, quoted certain portions of this act that dealt particularly with cases of mutiny and sedition. But there is more to be said than that. You must bear in mind, and this is a vitally important point, that this statute extends to all societies the objects of which are illegal. So that if you consider that you have had proper evidence that some person or persons administered an oath to bind to secrecy for any legal purpose, there is no doubt or question but that such an oath comes within the act, even though there may be no evidence to satisfy you that it is connected with a seditious purpose. That is all I have to say. I need hardly remind you that the case and your verdict is of far-reaching import. That such societies do exist is common knowledge. And if they are allowed to continue, there can be no doubt but that they will ruin masters, cause a stagnation in trade, and destroy property. Gentlemen, you will consider your verdict. Prisoners at the bar, you have been found guilty. Have you anything to say before I pronounce sentence upon you?
I should like to say something.
What's that? Did one of them say anything?
Yes, my lord. One of the prisoners said he would like to say something.
All right. Very well. Let him say it in as few words as possible.
My lord, I should like to say this. If we have violated any law, it was not done intentionally. We have injured no man's reputation, character, person or property. We were uniting together to preserve ourselves, our wives and our children from utter degradation and starvation. We challenge any man or number of men to prove that we have acted or intended to act different from what I've said.
The law punishes not for the sake of revenge. That is not in the view of those who administer the law, nor the intention of the law itself. It punishes for the sake of example. Having deliberated well and seriously upon all that has been said on your behalf, having deliberated well and seriously as to what is my own duty, I feel I have no discretion but that I am bound to pronounce the sentence of the law which the Act of Parliament has provided. And in so doing, I have in mind not so much anything that you may have done, or indeed that can be proved you intended to do, but as I say, that your punishment should be as an example to others. The sentence is 7 years' transportation across His Majesty's high seas upon each and every one of you.
Jenny?
So, Susan?
But your mother back?
No. I just gave Nellie and little Georgie their supper and put them to bed.
Oh, the London coach will be just gone through. And who do you think got down off it? One of those gentlemen what come down here for and persuaded your father and told him there wasn't no harm in it.
Be he coming here?
Where else? Here he come. Oh, and there'll be two others with him.
The one that told father there were no harm in it?
Ah,
If Mother come in when he be here.
Good day. May we come in? Are you one of the family?
I be a neighbour. This be Jenny, their eldest.
How do you do? Is your mother in?
Mother be in the fields, working. What be you come for?
To see your mother.
Are you sure it wasn't to see my father? He bain here. Didn't you know?
Jenny.
Ah, Mrs. Lovelace.
Yes?
You remember me?
Oh, yes. I remember you very well.
I hope you will find it in your heart to forgive me.
When you were here for, you only said things you thought was true. As far as I can see, they was true. Can you, I have to forgive.
Well, that's very generous of you.
I think I'd be more to blame for where he is now than anyone. Only maybe he'd done what he'd done without neither you nor me.
Mrs. Lovelace, these are two gentlemen who want to do what they can to help you. Mr. Walkley and Mr. Owen. Mr. Robert Owen.
This is a great honor. I'm proud to meet you. Very proud. Have you had any news of your husband?
Well, they've took him. He's gone. He bent here. That's all I know. I've heard nothing. Nothing except... Ginny, you best be going up to Nellie and little Georgie.
But, Mother...
It'll be easier for me with these gentlemen with you away.
Yes, Mother. If you want.
No. Nothing except he were ill. They must have treated him terrible hard.
Not necessarily.
I never knowed him to have a day's illness. Me to be bad and me not by. When he were better, they took him to Portsmouth. I had a word about him from there, from the clerk of the prison that went with him to guard him. They were a good man. He came and told me. 'Twas when he was being took through Salisbury. And the clerk of the prison said to him, "Will I take off the irons from your legs through the town, lest the rattling of the chains cause people to turn and stare?" "You'll put them on again after we're out of the town," asked my George. "I'll have to," says the clerk. "And let them stay," says my George. "The shame of these things isn't mine, but 'tis to those that caused them to be put upon me."
Oh, that was fine.
Aye, they'll not break his spirit, not my George's. And if he be keeping his spirit up, it's best I should. We was always as one. But I hadn't had no word from him. Not from him himself. He'd be out of reach. It'd be queer standing here and saying he'd be out of reach. And there'd be his coat on the wall there. Who'd be that? Susan, see who it be.
This is George Lovelace, Olivia.
Oh, thank you.
A letter, Betsy.
From George. Be it from George.
Aye.
Well, may we know?
You can read it. If you want. Take it, sir.
Good God. Written from the ship. Ever been on a convict ship, Walker?
No, but I can imagine what it's like.
Indeed, you can't. Listen to this. "Depend upon it, all will work together for good, and we shall yet rejoice together. I hope you will pay particular attention to the morals and spiritual interests of the children. Don't send me any money to distress yourself. I shall do well, for he who is lord of the winds and waves will be my support in life and death." And here... Here again. "You may safely rely upon it. I shall never forget the promise made at the altar. And though we may part a while, I shall consider myself under the same obligations as though living in your immediate presence."
Mrs. Lovelace, may I keep this letter for a day or two?
Keep it, sir.
You see, Mrs. Lovelace, I'm speaking in the House tomorrow evening.
Yes, sir. Whose house, sir?
The House of Commons. Parliament. And if you'd allow me to have this letter and perhaps read some of it...
You'd have it read out, sir, for all to hear. It were to me, sir, his last words to me.
I appreciate that. But you see, Mrs. Lovelace, the government and their supporters everywhere are doing everything they can to spread the impression that your husband and his friends were... Well, a bad lot. Poachers, smugglers, rioters, thieves.
Them? Rioters? my George asleep.
And if I could have this in my hand when I was on my feet in the house, it would be a very great help to us and to him.
If it would be help to George, sir.
I can?
Of course, sir.
Thank you.
It were written on the ship?
Yes.
He be gone now?
Yes.
How long do it take to get to the side of the world?
About 12 weeks or so.
Susan, will you thank the gentleman and tell him would they go now?
Gentlemen.
Mrs. Lovelace, we have arranged that you and your children should be well looked after while your husband is away. As far as money is concerned, you understand?
You're all very good to me, gentlemen, and kind, and I be grateful. But not now. It don't seem as though I could listen.
Good night, good night.
Leave me be, Susan. Good night.
I don't think I've ever seen a crowd like this in London before.
Certainly not here in the Tottenham Court Road.
Well, the procession should be coming round that corner any moment now.
Pray God there won't be any trouble. With these thousands of people out in the streets, anything might happen.
Where's our Right Reverend Doctor of Divinity?
Wade? Oh, he's leading the procession. But he said he'd leave them at Russell Square, cut round behind the British Museum, and join us here.
Well, this way. Come along. And Mr. Owen?
Mrs. Lovelace. Come, here's Mrs. Lovelace. Oh, I'm so glad you're here, and only just in time.
Well, any further news of him?
Nothing. Nothing, sir. But Sarah had a letter from James, his brother.
Close the window. Yes?
14 weeks on the sea they was. Oh, were a terrible letter. Chained up they was all the time with men the like of which they never knowed existed. More like beasts than men, and treated worse than any beast. The old time they was on that ship, the old 14 weeks, they wasn't able to stretch themselves out and lay down. Oh, sir, what be they doing to my George? What be they doing to him?
Don't cry, Mrs. Lovelace, don't cry. We're going to get him back. We're going to get them all back.
There's been such an outcry, such indignation from one end of the country to the other.
And not only from the workers, Mrs. Lovelace, but from many thousands who don't even approve of these new unions, but are jealous of their country's good name.
Protest meetings, demonstrations, processions all over the country.
Almost beyond belief. Why, in the last few weeks, we've had resolutions from... Cobb, where's that list? Ah, yes, here we are. In the last few weeks, from Newcastle, Belfast, Cheltenham, Hull, Yeovil, Liverpool, Leeds, Marylebone, Wolverhampton, Macclesfield, Loughborough, Sheffield, Nottingham, Walsall, Barnsley, Leicester, Bradford, Manchester, Halifax. Not so bad. It's the spontaneity of it that's so amazing. Not meetings of a few hundred, but thousands, tens of thousands.
And today is our crowning effort.
You saw the crowds as you came along.
I didn't know there were so many people in the world.
A great procession formed up this morning in Copenhagen Fields, right the other side of London, behind King's Cross. And they're marching now to Whitehall to deliver an enormous petition for a free pardon to the Home Secretary, to be presented to the King himself.
The Reverend Wade's here. He's just come in. The procession's just round the corner. He's been at the head of it on a horse, in his full rig out. By God, that parson's a great man. Here he is.
Well, Wade, how are things going?
Going? Magnificent, magnificent. Beyond all expectation. What a day. Our people began to collect and form up as arranged in perfect order at 7 o'clock this morning. They're marching now, a few moments off, 100,000 strong. Owen, old friend, 250,000 have signed the petition. We've had to put it on a cart and have it pulled along. The household troops are out, 2 detachments of lancers, 2 dragoons, 8 battalions of foot, and 29 cannon. And they swore in 5,000 special constables this morning. The city's like an armed camp.
Is there going to be trouble?
Trouble? Trouble. There's going to be trouble in the minds and consciences of the cabinet and nowhere else. Why, when we started, our own people themselves tried to stop the crowds who are lining the streets and the housetops all the way along from cheering. They know what they're here for. They know what it means that today should pass without any disorder. And they're determined, every man jack of them. God, this is a day to lift one's spirits and give one hope in mankind.
Oh, Wade. Wade, this is Mrs. George Lovelace.
Mrs. Lovelace. Oh, but I'm proud to meet you. Proud. This is a great privilege. Harry?
run downstairs and say that Mrs. Lovelace will appear at the window when the procession passes between Mr. Robert Owen and myself. See that they know it's Mrs. Lovelace. Let everyone you can know. Spread it round.
Yes, Mr. Wade.
Listen.
Yes, Mrs. Lovelace. They're here. They become a kind of anthem for the workers. Please, Mrs. Lovelace, you must show yourself.
Nothing I can do for you, friend?
I'm not like you. I'm not used to a hard life. I was brought up in comfort. I can't stand it. If I had the courage, I'd kill myself. If I had the strength, I'd kill that overseer. Then they'd hang me and I'd be out of it.
Why don't you? Then you have, and we might get a better one.
Yeah, you're right there.
What do you get your flogging for?
Well, when they sent me out here to Van Diemen's land, I made up my mind to work myself to the bone for them. Do everything to please them. But there's no pleasing that overseer. The more work I do, the more he gives me. Till I can't move, let alone work. And half starved.
Starved? Yeah, I'll get him. Why don't you go out one night and catch a stray dog or a cat and cook it? Well, like the rest of us, eh?
And then, when I'd worked desperately from the time I got up till night, he said I'd done nothing. He'd get me a flogging in the morning. I'd seen that, so I ran away. I got out into the bush. 4 days I was, lost. And when I came upon some people, I gave myself up, and they brought me back here. And they strapped me and tied me up to the triangle and lashed me. 50. You ever been flogged?
No.
How long you been here?
Night 2 years.
You'll get it. Yeah, sooner than you think. Yeah, I heard the overseer down here today it was. He didn't say he was sick of you. Always getting your work done and doing what you was told and being so well behaved.
That's right. Do your work too well and they frame you at the end of your term just to keep you. I've known that. I have many a time.
Yeah, me too.
We plow and sow, we'll very, very low, very delve in the dirty clay.
A master.
Which is the man?
This one, sir. George Lovelace.
What's the charge?
Neglect of duty, sir.
What are his duties?
Shepherd and stockkeeper, sir. And 9 of the wild cattle was taken to the pound yesterday, sir. He didn't miss until this morning.
Seems a pretty good case of neglect. Never heard a better. Well?
It is true, sir. 9 of the cattle was in the pound, and I didn't miss them till this morning.
A good flogging, sir, if I might suggest, we're doing no harm. I've been having a lot of trouble with him.
What have you got to say?
Yesterday, sir, I was up before sunrise and took the sheep into the bush to feed, and I come back to the farm here and had the cows. 10 of them, the milk, and as many calves to suckle, and there ain't a group of sheep again, sir. There'd be a lot of dogs about just now, sir, and they get among them and worry them, and I was weaning some lambs, and the ewes were that restless, I didn't like to leave them. And it was night and dark before I had time to see about the cattle. And so I came not to miss some of them, sir.
Is what this man is saying true? Well, come on, man, you must know. The sheep and the cows and the cattle, are they all in his
turf? Before he put his head in and they said your name, what do you think I was doing? Found myself looking at your name in the paper.
My name?
That's right.
And what paper is it?
This one, what I was reading.
But what paper is it?
Ah, it's a London paper, the London Dispatch. The master has them sent out. He gave me some to read. Here it is. George Lovelace, in print, in the paper. Just when they come in, I saw it. I ain't read what it says. See, there.
I'll get you now. I've been waiting for weeks. I'll get you. And what's more, before the day's out, I'll have you screaming for mercy, I'll show you.
Can you read?
Read? What do you mean, read?
Understand what's written down.
What do you take me for?
You can?
Of course I can.
Well, read that then.
Well, what's all this about?
You've read it?
I can read, I tell you, but not this stuff.
Then I read it to you. This be a London paper. And last night...
I didn't come here to be read to
you. I warn you, it'd be best for you. Now, you listen.
Warn me?
Aye. Last night in Parliament, Lord John Russell gave notice that orders had already been forwarded to the colonies concerned that the Dorchester labourers were not only to be set at liberty, but also to be sent back to England free of expense and with every necessary comfort.
Here, where are you going?
To Hobart Town. A night's walk, but I'll see the governor in the morning.
Look, governor.
It'll be dated March, and this be September. The order must have been here weeks.
Come in.
How do, Mrs. Lovelace?
How do, Robin? You'll stay and have a bite of something to eat.
Oh, I can't stay, Mrs. Lovelace, thank you. I promised to get back to the farm to help Father.
It's a long way to come, just look in for a few minutes.
It's been here all afternoon, Mother.
Oh, I see. Well, you'll not go before you've seen George. He'll want to see you. He's out sitting in his chair down the orchard. Sit you down, don't mind me. I'll just put these clothes in the bedroom.
She don't look as... Oh, what your mother must have been through.
Here she comes back quiet, Robin.
How can I keep quiet?
Oh, Robin, please.
Well, upon my word, what's the matter with you two? Lost your tongue, Robin? Oh, bless the boy, you look as if you'd seen a ghost.
Mrs. Lovelace, Nellie's told me.
Told you what?
Why, about Mr. Lovelace and him being taken and tried and sent over the seas.
You're not angry, Mother?
No, but I don't know what your father will say.
They're knocked me all of a heap. You've known Mr. Lovelace all these years. Here's a kind man and a good man, always ready to help a neighbour. I and a learned man with his books. But now...
And what now?
I know it's silly of me. Now I know. I feel I want to go to him out in the orchard and kneel down. Oh, maybe it's silly.
Well, maybe it's not. Anyway, if you feel like that, I'm glad Nellie told you, so there.
But, Mrs. Lovelace, what I can't make out is why you've never told anybody.
Oh, there's no great mystery to it. When they got back, they was made a great fuss of by their own people. When they landed in Exeter and again at Tallpuddle. But not by the masters. They had no love for him, nor no work. So some of the good folk that had worked all the time for bringing him back subscribed some money so we could come out here. Right away out here to Canada. Canada. Who'd have thought in the old days I'd ever seen Canada? And out here for the sake of the children, George said we'd say nothing, and we never have.
It must have been dreadful for you, Mrs. Lovelace, when they took him.
Ah, lad, I can't tell you about that. I call it to mind sometimes, but it's as if it happened to someone else.
Nellie's told me up to the time when he saw it in the newspaper about him having a pardon and the paper was near a year old. What did he do then?
Then he fought his way right to the governor of the island, he did.
And what did the governor do?
Oh, made a lot of excuses. They all did, so they didn't know where to find the men, but they knew'd right enough. They didn't want to send them back and didn't mean to. But George, he'd written to the papers about it out there, so it all come out, and they had to send him back, him and the others. I couldn't beat my George.
The part I liked best was when they took you to London and you heard all them people singing the piece that he wrote.
Now you know, I'll show you something. There. That's the piece, that's the poem, just as he wrote it on that piece of paper after the trial while he was waiting to be took away.
He's always seemed so gentle and... so old.
He's always been gentle, my George has. We've grown old together, so I don't notice that.
Ah, Robin.
Good afternoon, Mr. Lovelace.
Come over to see you now?
Yes, Mr. Lovelace.
It's mother and father.
Very well, thanks.
Ah, that's good.
Tell him you know. Go on, tell him now.
No, you.
Hey. Hey, now then, you two, what's all whispering about?
George, Nellie's been and told Robin about Tallpuddle and the Union and everything.
Come here, lad. So she's told you.
You don't mind, Mr. Lovelace?
Well, she's at all, yes. Or maybe it's a bit late-minded.
Mr. Lovelace, I give you my word, my solemn word, as one of the family, it shan't go no further.
Yeah, good.
Hey, no, I know. You'll tell me more about it. I mean, all you've been through.
Ah, well, I don't know as I'm over fond of talking about it.
They're all like that. I remember when I was a little girl in Tallpuddle. Just after they'd all come back, I was asking James Ammer.
Well, he was never one to talk.
No, but I remember I said to him, Uncle James, I used to call him Uncle James. Uncle James, I said, why won't you ever tell me about your adventures? Adventures, he said. You know the funny way he had it talking. Adventures, if you'd been put up and sold for a pound like a sheep, would you want to talk about it?
Yeah, there are things you must talk about and go on talking about till they'd be banished off the face of the earth. I wrote a book about him. Seemed the best I could do. I can't put him out of my mind.
But Mr. Lovelace...
Oh, no more now, Robin.
Oh, yes, all right. Well, I must be getting along, too. Good night, Mr. Lovelace.
Good night to you, my lad.
Good night, Mrs. Lovelace.
Night, Robin.
Will you walk a piece of the way, Mel?
Do you want him, Mother?
No, my dear, you go along with him. Don't take her too far, Robin.
No, Mrs. Lovelace. And if she should come too far, I'll walk back with her.
I'll get along with you.
Do you ever think of Dorset, Betsy?
Often, George.
Down in the yard this afternoon, it seemed it was a Dorset sun sinking over the Dorset orchards. Wonder how they'd be getting on. I'll be sure of one thing, Betsy, if the labouring people are ever to rise out their poverty and take their rightful share of their own toiling, they've got to do it for themselves. What you got there?
A piece you wrote after the trial.
Oh? That.
I can see you now, George, as you was took away and there was chains on your wrists, but I saw you toss something to the crowd.
Aye. And it was took straight back to the judge. I thought, where's my trees?
Oh, say it to me, George.
There, now, if I haven't forgot how it begins. Read me out the first line.
I can't.
Why not?
Not without my spectacles.
And where are they?
I lost them.
Well, what's good of you having spectacles if you keep losing them?
You read it.
Can't.
Why not?
Why not without my spectacles?
Where are they?
I don't know. Well, you lost them as well as your own, and that's what you've done.
That I haven't. Here you are.
God is our guide. No swords we draw. We kindle not war's battle fires. By reason, union, justice, law, we claim the birthright of our sires. We raise the watchword, liberty. We will be free. What we did was right, Betsy. I know that. That's something. But I'd be tired. Now it's for them that come after.
In Six Men of Dorset, by Miles Mallison and H. Brooks, George Lovelace was played by Haydon Jones, Betsy by Avril Elgar, Counsel for the Defense by Miles Mallison, and the Reverend Dr. Wade by Willoughby Goddard. The other parts were played by Susan Bone, Heather Kidd, David Lott, and members of the BBC Drama Repertory Company. The play was produced by Charles Lefeu.